Hi, and welcome to part 6 of the MVC storefront. This is a real-world application building exercise wherein we're building out an e-commerce storefront using ASP.NET MVC. My name is Rob Connery. I work for Microsoft. My email is robconn@microsoft.com. Please send me an email if you have any questions, or you can leave a comment on this blog. I'd like to start by going over some feedback I received by email and my blog, and that is primarily with respect to what I'm calling the repository pattern and the fact that it deviates from definition. This is true. What I've been doing sort of follows loosely with the repository pattern, at least that's where I started, but I quickly veered into something else as I discovered how flexible iQueryable could be with respect to testing and separating out some code. If we look at a diagram here, you can see we have a database, passes the data to a mapper, or let's more accurately say the mapper pulls it, then the repository might filter it, and then you have methods on the repository that handle the querying and all the querying logic, and those methods hand back the objects. Well, what I've wanted to get away from, this is what I've had happen in the past, is that if you do this with the repository, what you end up with is, if you're using more than one, you end up with an API that gets quite heavy and doesn't scale very well. In other words, if you look at the diagram here, you notice there's three iRepositories. Each one of those iRepositories have to implement every get method, is what I call it, as well as every save and update method. Now, sometimes that's okay, but other times I can get a little bit weighty. And one of the APIs that always comes to mind is the membership API for ASP.NET. If you've ever tried to implement your own, you know what I'm talking about. So what I thought I might call this, I'm just taking a shot at this, is Repository Plus. Why not? It's a change. The main reason that I think it's okay to do this is because, you know, the language is changing. iQueryable has been introduced that allows you to pass off execution and filtering up the layer using link. So in this case, I don't really have an OR mapper. Some might say link to SQL is. It sort of lacks the mapping, and I'm sort of having to do that by hand, but that's okay. Let's ignore where that is for now, because right now it's in the repository. But I'm sort of doing the same thing, except what I'm passing back out is iQueryable of product that allows you to do the filtration up one level in the business logic layer. This is nice for me because back in the old repository pattern, the current one, let's call it that, you have to do all that filtration in every single repository, and all that logic gets repeated. In this case, you're handing it back to the service layer. So it might work for some, might not for others. As I mentioned, this is brand new. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how it works out. But for right now, I have to kind of keep on trucking until the pattern falls on its face, which it very well may. And I really want to hear your feedback on it. But what we have coming up right today is a demo that I have to consider. And as you know, clients can get cranky. So this segment, part 6, is going to deal a little bit with some refactoring and getting ready with the test data we left off with last time, as well as preparing our UI for the demo. So as you may remember from part 5, the client gave us a whole bunch of test data in XML format that they managed to scrape out of their mainframe. They also gave us a bunch of images and some logo information too that we could use for the demo. It's very important to them that we visually understand what we're doing here, and I agree with that. So in order to facilitate this, I went in and kind of changed around the database a little bit more in readying the database up for import. And I got rid of a few of many-to-many relationships that didn't need to be there and simplified as much as I could. And then I went ahead and imported all the data in, so now we have a nice complete representative database. Well, in order to get this to work right, I also had to change around the model a little bit, and I added a few things here. Specifically, I added three classes, the base image class, as well as two other classes here that inherit from it, product image and category image. I also added a iList of images here to product. I added a manufacturer property, as well as one of a default image. Notice there's also a child collection of images. It's because each product can have more than one, but there's also the concept of a default image, and I wanted to have that there as well. And with category, we went and added an iList of products here, as well as an image. And that's pretty much it for what we changed with the model, but as you can imagine, this might have broken a few things, and it didn't break too much, but to help me out here, this is a really nice aspect of TDD. Since I changed everything around, it resulted in a lot of tests failing. I also refined a few items, But within no time, I was able to write just enough code to have those tests pass and not go crazy. And that was a good feeling to see all the nice green checkboxes there. One of the issues that I'm facing right now with all the changes to the model is lazy versus eager loading. If you're not familiar with this concept, basically it's the idea of loading up child collections with every single parent object. So in this case, you just need to ask yourself, do I load up all the products when I load up all the categories? If you say yes, then you like eager loading. If you say no, then you want lazy loading. So this is pretty situational. And right now, what I know is that for my demo, what I really need is the idea of lazy loading here. Now, with Link to SQL, I get this already built in. But that's one of the sacrifices I've had to make since I'm trying to abstract my model away. A lot of people disagree with this decision. However, I want to keep plowing ahead to see if this pattern is going to work. One of the things I'm very interested in doing is to abstract the data context and all notion of data access away from the model. This is particularly important to me for testing and also to make sure that I can transplant the repositories as I need. However, having said that, if it results in too much code or too intense an effort, I won't persist with doing it and I'll switch back to a different pattern. So now that I need to implement lazy loading, let's go and see how we did it. Now, first off, I was very tempted, but I knew it was wrong. I was very tempted to come in here and make this an iQueryable of product. That's the very definition of lazy loading. And if I said products to list, if this is iQueryable, that would fire the query only when I needed it. However, I obviously don't want iQueryable on my model. That's a little too much logic, and you don't want to put any querying, unless you're using Active Record, you don't want to use any querying in your model. So I was a little bit stuck in figuring out how to handle this, and what I decided to do was call Ayende Rahin, who's been helping me an awful lot with this application. And so one of the things he came up with that I thought was pretty ingenious was this idea of a lazy list. And that is it's just a class that inherits from iList, and in the constructor it takes in an iQueryable. So in this case we're going to pass in an iQueryable of product. And only when the enumerator is fired, which is a getEnumerator method for iEnumerable here, will it actually fire that query. And it only happens one time and it only happens when I need it. This is a really easy class to write, and to me it seemed perfect. So let's go take a look at how it's implemented. And let's open up our SQL catalog repository. And if we come over here to get categories, just close that. In get categories here, you can see here's where we defined the culture query, and that was covered in part 5. What I decided to do here is add a new definition inside of the iQueryable for categories here. And I set products equal to a new lazy list, and I'm simply passing in an iQueryable here that pulls out all the products from get products here, pulls out all the products where the category IDs match. And that's exactly what I want. So that works out nicely. It's not a lot of code. It's just an extra link statement right there. And if you take a look down here, you can also see that for the rest of the catalog service, I went and implemented all the methods here. As you can see, pretty simple stuff. Not a lot of code yet for all this mapping, so I'm still feeling comfortable plowing ahead with this pattern. But what I did want to do to make sure it all worked is to continue on running the spikes and making sure that it's working the way I want to. So to see these spikes, let's go and open this up here, and we'll go into the integration test. This is my first spike test here, which was basically testing that I can pull out categories out of the database. Well, I added two more, and again, this is running against test data, and this is a spike. It's not necessarily supposed to hit. TDD is not supposed to hit a live database unless you're running an integration test. But right now, I'm just kind of making sure that the data in there is coming out the way I want it to. So I added two more tests here to make sure everything works. The first one I ran here is to make sure that category 9 has 10 products. So I asked the service to grab me a category, and I wanted to make sure that products.count brings back a 10. Now this count method here is going to fire the enumerator on lazy list and basically test that pattern and make sure lazy list is firing what I want it to. Second test here is testing whether products is pulling back images the way it should be. And I happen to know that product 3 is pulling has three images to it, and so let's just run those tests really quickly here and make sure that they work. I have them selected down at the bottom, and when I run that, they all pass, which is great. Okay, so I have my data access kind of worked up here, I have my test data in. I'm ready to start working on the UI, and so let's move to that next. Let's switch gears now and start talking about the user interface. Getting this right is critical, especially for this first demo where we need to show the client that we've listened to them. Because after all, what the client has said after every single meeting and all the requirements is what they really want to do is sell stuff. It's important that we communicate that we understand this aspect. The last thing we want to do is cloud up our UI with a bunch of complicated nonsense and spinning graphics and a bunch of other stuff. What we really want to pay attention to is the idea of simplicity. Coach Jeff Atwood of CodingHorror.com put this perfectly when he said, if users can't figure out how to use or navigate your application, then they're going to pass you up and go to someplace else that's a lot easier to use. Seth Godin, who's one of the great marketers and presenters out there, has some great information on his blog at SethGodin.com. One of his great presentations was to Google. It was All Marketers Are Liars, and it was given back in July of 2007. And you can watch this up on YouTube. But one of his great lines out of there was, no one cares about you. And it's interesting because what it drives home is that, you know, us as engineers and geeks and the client having this wonderful company, no one really cares about either of those things. What they really care about are the things they've come to buy. So if they come looking for books, they're going to want to see their book. They really don't care how neat your brand is. Amazon gets this, and if you take a look at Amazon.com, you can see their brand is up in the top left in very, very small print. You can still recognize that little smile, and the colors are always present. But basically what they've done is shower you with the things that you want to see so they can make the sale, because what they really want to do at the end of the day is sell stuff. So I took the sell stuff sort of mantra, and I applied this to the Commerce Starter Kit about a year and a half ago when I sat with a bunch of my marketing friends, and I said, what's the best way to sell things online? And so we got a bunch of great input, which is using three columns, having enough space for everything, and the heavy use of pictures. Now, if I did my job right, when we open this slide up right here, the first thing that you should have seen is a red Ferrari on a nice big television set. That is critical because the first thing you want your client to see is the thing they want to buy. Notice how the eye wanders over to the camera and the DVD player on the right side there. The use of things like color is also critical. Notice here that the whole framework of the site, which is the top bar, is muted back and really doesn't jump out at you. All the links and everything else are really muted back, highlighting all the products for the user. One of the things I want to do right now is to make sure that I get the HTML and CSS structured properly from the get-go. The last thing I want, after the client looks at our neat demo, is to have him open up the site in a different browser than we were targeting and have everything fall to the floor. So I'm no HTML and CSS whiz. I know my way around a style sheet, but my friend John Galloway is really good at this stuff. He's a super creative guy, and so what I thought I would do is ask him if he'd do a pair programming session with me and walk me through some of the nice ways that you can structure out HTML and CSS. Okay, so I'm talking to John Galloway, and we are looking at the ASP.NET MVC template here. I haven't done anything to this, and what I'm talking to John about specifically today is how to structure up the HTML and CSS properly. One of the things that John brought up was that the site master page is a pretty good example of a nice structuring of HTML with CSS in mind. So without further ado, John, tell me why you think this is good and point out some things about it.
Sure. Okay, well, so a few things that I like about this. Number one is that it's not using tables for layout, which is helpful because that's going to give you a lot of options down the road if you want to move things around. Mm-hmm. You're not tying yourself to a layout right up front. Another thing I like is that you've got IDs and classes well assigned to different elements, which means that your CSS can target directly to any element that defines then your page more as an API. So you've got your content, and then in a way you're kind of defining interfaces or a way that your CSS can target those specific elements and kind of tell them how they should light up on the screen.
So if we take a look at the ID here, this is sort of a structural element. And then Inside of it, we have a little bit more like logo. And then if we notice here, there's no class defined, but what you're talking about is, you know, this API approach. If we take a look at the CSS that's behind it here, we can see we're identifying an ID. Anything with a pound sign is an ID. And inside of it, we might be like here, defining an anchor tag for the logo ID. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the idea there is you didn't need to define another class or an ID specifically to that anchor tag. contextually, we know that, or the CSS and the page layout knows that, okay, I'm inside that logo, so I can get right to that A tag.
So, interesting. Yeah. So there's only one ID allowed per page. That's another thing that you were mentioning to me before.
Right, and ID, you'd kind of think of it sort of, I guess, as a singleton. There's only going to be, so you'd use those for structural elements, like you're saying. If you're going to have a news item, you wouldn't want to define that as an ID, because then you run into trouble when you want your second news item on the page. So you really want those for headers, footers, columns, that kind of thing.
I was just going to say, so in my case, where I want to do a three-column layout with a header and a footer, I would probably want to have IDs for each one of those things, like a header ID, left column, center, right, and then footer IDs. Is that right?
Yeah, that's generally right. Although, you know, if say, for instance, with columns, maybe you're going to want to add a new column on later or something. So I think that a better idea, for if you're not sure, is to go with the class. And then kind of you can promote something to an ID if you want later, but it's that same kind of thing where you're kind of, you may paint yourself into a corner if you depend on IDs as being only one of a kind.
Interesting. So maybe what I can do is just use what they've started here, because they have the notion of a header and a logo, right, which every site does, and then also this notion of main content. And inside there, I can see what they're doing. They're doing a class of left column and right column. Maybe I'll just use that and extend it, which is a nice place to start, correct?
And, you know, just a small criticism that, you know, I'd have there maybe, is that left column and right column does say something about where it appears on the page, and really from a purist point of view, you would want to say that this is a navigation column and not a left column.
So instead of placement, you're saying something more like purpose driven.
Exactly. You're defining what the content is.
So let's talk about something like, we mentioned this before, divs versus tables. You hear it a lot. Talk about that a little bit, because people are pretty zealous on this point. But what, if you break it all down, kind of remove the zealotry, what does it buy me?
Well, yeah, the big thing is, and you know, we before we've looked separately at CSS Zen Garden, which is a good example of what it does buy you. But the idea is that if you define things, you mark things up using tables, you've pretty much locked down your design for the page. And then later on, if we say, hey, you know what, we want to move our navigation to the left of the page or to the top, or it's locked in place. And so what you buy by using divs here is, like in this example you've got on the screen, here we move the navigation to the left side of the page without making any changes to the HTML. It's just a modification to the CSS. So you know, you asked, or you talked about divs and tables. So a first step in moving from a div, or from a table to a div is really just kind of a block on a page. It's a generic block. So that's a step towards, you know, we can float a div to a side, we can align it, we can move it, we have a lot of control over that. Even better, though, is if you can define something more at the content level. So here you've got H2s and ULs. So we're saying that this is, you know, it's an unordered list, or an H2 says something about it. You know, it's not just a div with some text in it. This is a heading. This is the secondary level heading. So it's H1 we'd look at as probably being the heading for the page, and then H2 is kind of it's a subheading. So the idea is, the more specific we can be from a content point of view to define what our content is, the easier it is to maintain it later and then do more with it.
You know, I've done this a number of times where I've tried to make this stuff work, and it's easy to do the skeleton layout, but man, once you start getting into it, organizing this stuff is really not easy. And you quickly end up with, as with any API, right, if you don't have enough forethought, end up with a ton of spaghetti CSS, what's this and what's that, and a lot of repeated class code. And you know, do you have a resource that you would recommend for anybody to read, aside from CSS for Dummies?
A book I'd recommend for this, just in general, is it's a book called The Zen of CSS Design, and that's based on CSS Zen Garden again, and that's by David Shea and Molly Hirschwagel. and what's great with that is that they go through and they explain they look at specific designs and then they say, okay, here's how we did that. And it's a lot easier to pick it up that way as opposed to just trying to read a bunch of properties and try and figure it out. It's a much more kind of look and do approach to it, which has been very helpful to me.
Okay, that's it for part 6. Next time I'm going to be working almost exclusively with the web project here, building out our controllers, models, and views to support our demo. By the time part 7's over, the client will have their demo site ready to go. Thank you for watching. Thank you.